Fear the Walking Dead Talk Through, Episode 12. Sicut Cervus Review.
Welcome to Fear the Walking Dead Talk Through, a fan podcast dedicated to Fear the Walking Dead on AMC. Join us each week as we discuss the characters, story developments, and theories of Fear the Walking Dead. Send in your thoughts about each episode by calling 304-837-2278 or by visiting our feedback page at goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback. And now, here's your hosts, Brian and Ruthie.
Hey, survivors. Welcome to another episode of Fear the Walking Dead Talk Through. I'm Brian.
And I'm Ruthie.
And tonight, we are here to discuss Season 2, Episode 6, and hopefully I will do as good of a job as Ruthie did to pronounce this episode title, Sicut Cervus. It is written by Brian Buckner, and of course, you know, the fact that he's a Brian makes him an outstanding writer. And directed by Kate Dennis. And before we get started, we always like to give this disclaimer. Please be warned, if you're not caught up on The Walking Dead, there may be spoilers ahead. So actually, there definitely will be spoilers ahead this time because I've got news and they're all spoilery.
Stuff and things.
And I have a second disclaimer tonight.
Yeah.
The opinions expressed by us are our own and not swayed by any other podcast, blog, or video except for AMC content. In other words,
all right,
good. I did what I said I was going to do. I did not listen to any podcasts, any extra videos, or anything beyond AMC except for one thing. And that was, but I think it's still within the realms of okay. I got a little bit of a meaning on the owl from Dave Erickson in an interview on entertainmentweekly.com or EW.com. So,
but they did talk about the owl a little bit on Talking Dead.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, anyway, so I got a little bit of a background on the owl because that was very intriguing to me. So that's it. But I did fulfill this. So hopefully I will not sound like an idiot, but I will also not sound like a plagiarist. What the hell is happening?
What the hell is happening?
I have no idea.
All right. So our ratings first. And ratings are relatively, although if you, depending on your source, they may say that they're down. Relatively even with last week. Fear the Walking Dead got a 1.94 in the 18 to 49, slightly down from last week's 1.97, with 4.486 million, slightly up from 4.41 million last week. Talking Dead was at a 0.65, which is slightly down from a 0.7 last week, with, believe it or not, 1.600 million. And I actually got that from a site that goes three decimal places on the, viewings. And it was actually 1.600. I was shocked. Versus slightly beating 1.597. So I guess an extra, 3,000 people watched it?
No idea.
And since we're talking Talking Dead, a brief note that, and a reminder, if you haven't heard it yet, that the mid-season finale for Talking Dead will be airing later next week, thanks to the 90-minute episode of the premiere of Preacher. So Talking Dead will probably be at its latest ever 11:30 p.m. Eastern, 10:30 Central.
Wow.
So
that's exciting.
Yes. News. I think this might be a record for news. I was able to get 4 pieces of news this week, and they're all pretty big. So the very first two are really big. And they're all, well, I shouldn't say they're all Walking Dead related. 2 of them are both, but 2 of them are Walking Dead. First is that, and you can take it for whatever it means, but Steven Yeun and Norman Reedus were photographed at the scene of an accident in Peachtree, Georgia, helping out some motorists that got into an accident. They were helping them get out of the car, and they stayed around, made sure everything was okay for, I guess, about an hour or so. And they were in costume. So anyway, you can take it for what it means.
Make of that what you will.
Yes. I would be hesitant to draw any conclusions from that, especially considering, you know, how much time had passed during the beginning of filming for season 7. Secondly, Robert Kirkman yesterday, specifically because of he's got that Outcast show starting in June on Cinemax. Mm-hmm. He did a Reddit Ask Me Anything, or AMA, yesterday, Monday the 16th of May. And I put some good quotes where he talked about the finale and how it pertains to season 7 on our Facebook group. So I don't want to go into details here because we've got a lot to cover tonight. But if you want to read about that, there is a link both to the AMA, which has all of the many comments in there. And he wasn't holding back anything. He didn't skirt things. He answered things directly and, you know, talked about the new show and some other goofy things, but he did talk directly about the finale and, understands that some people were disappointed about it and, you know, hopes that,
disappointed is putting it mildly.
Yeah. and even he says, was it a misstep? And he says, maybe. So, you know, I thought that was honest to say that, you know, even to acknowledge that it might have been a misstep. But, anyway.
Well, I mean, it's hard to know something like that, you know, until you're past it.
Yeah.
So
I think
we'll all find out.
I think he is correct in saying that it will take the season 7 premiere and into season 7 to know whether or not it was a mistake or if everything, you know, plays out well. So, but anyway.
Yeah, he seemed pretty braggy about the season 7 premiere. So,
yeah. Yeah.
Okay, dude. We'll see.
Hopefully he can back it up.
That's right.
Thirdly, and I thought this was actually very interesting. One of my coworkers alerted me to this. Adult Swim is doing a special episode of Robot Chicken called...
Very special episode
of... Yes. Called Robot Chicken, The Walking Dead. And it is in partnership with Kirkman and Gimple. And, of course, all of the Robot Chicken team, including... And I'm sure you know him, Seth Green. He's co-creator, I guess, of Robot Chicken, which I didn't realize. The actor, Seth Green, who was, wasn't he Austin Powers' son?
Yeah, but I was going to say he was better known as Oz from Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
That's right, yeah. Anyway, he's the werewolf. He's been, I didn't realize he's 42 years old. I was surprised. Did not know he was that old. Anyway. So that sounds like it's going to be pretty cool. I know my coworker was pretty excited about it. So, and lastly, Topps, who is of course well known for their trading cards, you know, baseball, football, basketball, and various other cards. They are doing a line on The Walking Dead and Fear the Walking Dead trading cards, both online and physical trading cards. And it reminds me of the cards that I used to collect way back when, 30 years ago, I used to have Star Trek The Next Generation and Star Trek The Original Series Topps cards. So I thought that was pretty cool.
Any of those when I was growing up?
Yeah.
My thing.
Yeah, I had them, and I had them for the longest time, and a bunch of baseball cards too. And I went to, when my mom passed away, I went to get them, and they were gone.
Huh.
I don't know what happened to them, but they were gone. So lost them all.
That's disconcerting.
Yeah. Anyway, so now we talk about our ratings.
Phew.
So I thought this was probably the best episode so far of Fear the Walking Dead. And it wasn't perfect. It did have a couple of issues. But I thought overall, even with those issues, which are fairly minor, just annoying things, that it was the best episode. So I give it, and I hope I get the pronunciation correct on this. And I should say that we always use words that are in the episode, okay? So keep that in mind. I give this, and I hope I get it right, 9.3 cabrones. What is a cabrones? Cabrones is assholes in Spanish.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Yep. Yeah, I had to look that up, and I said that is what my rating's going to be this week. So what about you?
I think I am going to give it a... Oh, it's so tough. I don't know. I can't decide if I...
Roll the dice.
I think I'm going to go 9.2. 9.2 doomed dogs.
Oh, doomed dogs. Yes.
Poppy. I hate it when stuff like that happens.
I do too.
Like, what did that dog ever do to you? So, okay. I don't know if you ever saw John Wick.
No, I have not.
It was pretty good, but the thing that pissed me off the most and made me want to kill the bad guys the most was when something happened that I'm not going to spoil now. I changed my mind.
There was, I might as well say this, just before we started recording, my wife heard a report of a court case today that's local to Cleveland. This guy threw a puppy down down 6 flights of stairs. Yeah. And basically it died, but not right away. Yeah, threw it into a dumpster, and basically, I guess it wasn't down the stairs. It was down into a dumpster. Yeah, into a dumpster. So, and the judge said that you should be in the dumpster. So,
yeah, no kidding.
Yeah,
it's terrible.
Yeah,
I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm not like trying to be a part of PETA or anything like that. I just, it hurts my feelings when people are mean to dogs.
Yeah, because
they're so loyal. They're man's best friend. I mean, I prefer cats over dogs. I don't dislike dogs. I just like cats. They're easier to take care of, and I need something that's easy. But I get mad. Well, I get mad when people are super mean to any kind of animal, really. Like, especially with all the horses that have died on this show. Well,
yeah.
Dead, I guess.
Yeah.
But still, what did that horse ever do to you? Anyway, let's move on before I go off on a real tangent.
What is this bizarre segue that's happening right now? Can we maybe...
other ratings we got. Kyle said, liking this, I give this episode 10 out of 10 poison wafers. Don't eat them.
Don't eat them. Don't eat it. Malika gives it 9.65 creepy Chris's.
And Dieta, also referring to the communion wafers, gives it 9 out of 10 poisonous communions.
Poisonous communions. Golly. Ugh, so much stuff. Okay.
All right. Now it's time for our awesome sauce.
Awesome sauce!
What you got?
I honestly wasn't really watching that much for the awesome sauce, I guess. But my favorite, I think, was when Ophelia steps up and takes out the choir boy. I was like, oh, crap. Or I guess he was an altar boy, maybe. No, he was a choir boy. He was wearing his little choir outfit.
Yeah. Anyway. Well, altar boy, I think.
Well, no, he was in the choir.
He was? He? Okay.
Yeah. Well, he was, the robes that he was wearing, he was singing. Those were the boys, the boys were singing. Apparently, they were that song, or Sicut Cervus, was the song that they were singing at the beginning. It was in Latin. I had no idea because it was in Latin. I don't speak Latin. As is obvious by, you know, whatever. Who's wearing the little choir robes?
Yeah. So. All right. Well, my first awesome sauce, I had to give it to the Strand Thomas relationship. You know, I had my doubts right until it happened, basically, when Strand comes across Thomas's pickup truck. And I felt like such a heel afterwards. I want to give kudos to the writers. I thought that this was it was really wonderful, the job that they did with this relationship and I think Strand in general, because you're making, because of the character that you see up until this point, you're wondering at, you know, right until that moment, it's like, you know, is he really in love with Thomas, or, you know, but clearly, I mean, the emotions that he had, and that I just was really touched by it. And, you know, I said, I think this was the first time on this show that I actually got a little teary.
Aww.
Yeah. Of course, you know, with The Walking Dead, it happens like every 5 minutes, but that's besides the point. So, yeah, I thought that was fantastic, and kudos to the writers. Just the overall character arc of Strand, I have to applaud.
Okay. I think if I wanted to pick another one, I would probably pick the Daniel flashbacks. I thought they were pretty darn cool. I liked it.
Yes, they were...
Maybe not really flashbacks so much as snippets.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess if I were to give one more, and I'm doing this literally, I'm improving. I would have to give it to the Daniel at the, you know, and right when the shots were fired and all that, he was on the ball. First thing he did, came out there and took care of the two federales or whatever they were from the Mexican inspectors, whatever they are, make sure that they didn't turn. And then, of course, you know, he was also going to do the same to Luis. But more on that in a little bit. So just for being on the ball.
Okay.
All right. We got a couple came in. Malika gave one to Ophelia, saving her father from the child walker. Can't wait to see the backstory to that vision he had of himself while he froze.
Yeah.
And she is also assuming, I guess, the same thing that Jim Gaffigan assumed, which is that this was himself. And I also think it was himself.
Me too. I thought he was remembering himself, I guess. Mm-hmm. Or something that had happened to him when he was a little boy. Okay. Dieta says, church zombie herd. Yeah.
Yeah. Short and sweet and to the point. Yeah, I thought that was really good. Unfortunately, though, I have a weak sauce.
You're worthless and weak.
And I have to give it, not to the story, but to, well, I don't know who gets this, the editors, the showrunner, whoever, they need to really do a better job with those subtitles. In,
I'm sure who that would be.
In the best, where there was the best contrast, the print on it was somewhat hard to read, especially, you know, if you're several feet away from the TV, like I was on first watch. But it got even worse, almost unreadable, I'll say. When, I guess her name was Sophia. Who? I think her name was Sophia. The woman that was like also.
Lisa's mom?
No, that's Celia. The woman that, you know, greeted them, that she was dressed in white, talked to. Idea. Well, anyway, the woman who was dressed in white, who had a brief conversation with Daniel in Spanish. She was wearing white, and she was speaking in Spanish, And her subtitles were also in white, right over top of her white outfit. So it was almost impossible to read. I don't
understand white subtitles anyway. Just make them yellow.
Yeah. I don't understand. I mean, at least, you know, put some kind of like drop shadow or something to make them easier to read. I mean, I said it on here that I couldn't read it at all on the TV screen. And even when I was looking at it later on my iPad, it was even hard to read. Like I had to like go back, you know, hit rewind several times to read what the heck she was saying.
Yeah.
So
not a big deal to native Spanish speakers, I guess, but that's not me. I don't remember specifically thinking, you know, oh man, can't read anything. I don't remember thinking that necessarily, but that doesn't mean it's not true. It just means that I adapted or something. I don't know.
you have a bigger TV than I do as well, so.
I do, but that doesn't always matter. I mean, I don't sit like 2 feet away from my TV, so.
It's not just that. I mean, the actual.
2 inches or whatever.
The actual font that they're using is difficult to read. It's like a narrow font.
It's terrible. Yeah. It's really bad. I don't know who is in charge of that. I'm assuming like a. I don't know, some editing something or other. But yeah, they need to come up with a better font.
Yeah, bad enough that I have to actually slightly deduct based on that, just for the annoyance factor. Mm. All right, so I think it's time for discussion.
Yep.
You can ask me anything. I won't hold nothing back. I am, hey, look, I'm an open book.
I am an open book.
And usually we start this with the cold open, but I am going to go to the previously on Fear the Walking Dead, to the pre-cold open, because it was just before the cold open, and something that Luis said that I think was an omen, or at least a hint to what we were about to see. He said to Nick, death is a way to new life, and also was talking about how his mother would survive in any situation.
Any world.
Yeah, any world. And I think that was a hint to what we were about to see.
Yes. Slightly prophetic, I guess.
Yeah. Now to the cold open. So I had, this was one of the places where I needed to dock the episode because I was confused by the cold open the first time. Less confused the second time I watched the episode, but I really didn't completely get it until I think I watched the cold open a third time to get everything that was going on. Now, you tell me if I understood this correctly, because like I say, I have not benefited from listening to other podcasters give their YouTubers or whatnot giving their impressions. So I may have this wrong, but. This was my understanding of what was going on. He was giving his sermon and the priest was basically saying that they were going to fight. They were going to resist and that they were going to, fight the evil. And originally when I watched this, I thought that they were fighting the evil by doing a Jim Jones and, you know, drinking the Kool-Aid, except in this case, it was eating the communion wafers that were poisoned. But then I realized after, again, the second watch of the episode and then, you know, watching it all the way through and then watching the cold open a third time, that instead they were going to come to the Abigail compound or whatnot, and they were going to fight whatever was there. And Thomas was saying that the people there were going to fight, you know, who was going to come there. And he said something like, you know, you're fighting death with death. And then
I did say that.
Yeah. And then, you know, when the parishioners, you know, start, you know, coming down originally when the blood was coming out of their eyes, I was thinking that whatever they were poisoned with was actually killing their brain, but I guess not. That Celia did it. And again, I didn't completely understand what was going on until the third watch of the cold open. So
I don't think that that's something that you should necessarily dock an episode for.
Okay. Well, I did.
Just because you don't understand it doesn't mean that it's not understandable.
Well, I dock it just because it was confusing. And it was, it could have been told in a little less confusing way.
Oh, I did not really think it was that confusing.
Well, I mean, I gave this episode a 9.3, so I didn't dock it a lot. So, okay. I mean, I still really, I think this is the best episode so far of the show. Yeah. Was Thomas taking Celia's side there with the comment about death with death?
No. I think what he meant was kind of like, you know, like if you punish a child for hitting by spanking them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like you're punishing violence with violence,
right?
Basically. So you're fighting death by, you know, trying to basically storm the castle. And, you know, I don't think that he was taking Celia's side or trying to, well, I don't know. I mean, because he says, the priest says, don't protect her.
Yeah.
So initially when I watched this, I thought to myself, I was like, okay, I was trying to figure out what is going on. And I'm like, my very first comment was, what the hell is going on?
Well, I mean, that shows you that there's some similarities in how we took it. Cause I really was like, what the hell is going on? And it took me a while to figure out what was going on.
Again, I'm going to say, I don't think that is something that should be docked because of, I mean, that just means that they did a good job of making you pay attention. I think, I mean, I didn't like when the cold open turned on, I was like, I did not immediately know what was happening. I mean, I knew they were in a church. I knew that they were, you know, taking communion, blah, 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 all that kind of stuff. What I didn't know immediately was how this fit into the whole story. Well, I personally like that sometimes because I don't like it when I can tell what's going on before, or I can, you know, when things are way too telescoped and I'm like, ugh,
right.
If you see it, you know, coming down Main Street, as they say, I'm like, I don't like that. I like having to think about things and not just have it, you know, spelled out for me or monologued out for me or whatever. I like to try to figure out what's going on, draw my own conclusions and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So just because my very first thought was, what the hell is going on, doesn't mean that I was confused the entire way through. It just means my first thought is, what the hell is going on? But then as I was watching it, I kind of, you know, I missed a few things the first time. But as he's talking, so, you know, Abigail shows up flying out of nowhere and he's like, you know, he's like, don't do this, you're fighting death with death, blah, 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 blah. And the first time I watched it, I heard the priest say her, and I was thinking, okay, who is her? I did not hear the name the first time, so I missed that. But the second time I watched it, I mean, of course, by the end of the episode, I'd already figured out that her was Celia. Duh. But then, like the second time I watched it, I heard him actually say Celia, and I was like, oh, so they did say that right away, and I just didn't hear it the first time. Yeah. So,
the funny thing is, you had the same kind of reaction that I did.
Except for, I guess, I liked it and you didn't.
No. I liked it. I just didn't love it. I thought it could have been a little...
You got points because of that. Yeah. Not liking it. I don't think that means you like it. If you dock points because of something, that's not I liked it.
Fair enough.
I mean, I don't know.
I just meant, well, it docks it from perfection. So
okay, agree to disagree. So I can't even remember what your
so
question.
Close. Was. We're so close on it that's not even worth this talking about. Why did he leave the truck behind?
That was one question that I had. I thought, okay, how the heck did he make it back to the house if he left the truck there?
Yeah.
That was the one thing that I didn't quite understand why or how, or, I mean, for one thing, I guess that's when he got bitten too. Probably when, Victor is trying to reach him and he couldn't get through or he didn't pick up or whatever, because he was like, I mean, they all turned pretty much. They all died right then. So they all probably turned right then. So I'm assuming that's when he got bitten, and I do not know why he would have left the truck though. That to me is worthy of being docked, because there's no reason. The only reason that he left the truck there was so that they could all get in it and drive back.
We're basically agreeing. It's funny.
I didn't say we weren't agreeing, okay. Except for I don't agree with you about docking points because it's confusing. That's what I don't agree with you about. I think that you should dock points for something like, I'm bitten and I'm probably mortally wounded. I'm going to walk back though. Mm-hmm. I mean, why? Why are you going to walk back? You're going to take your damn truck. The only reason to leave the truck there is so that they have something to drive in.
Have something to drive back. Yeah.
Yeah. That's the only reason. And that kind of irritated me a little bit. I was like, come on.
It was very, yeah.
Rearing his ugly head.
Yeah. Well, anyway.
So what, you asked me something about the cold open and I can't remember what it was. I was trying to explain it to you, but we got sidetracked by the, I was confused in dock points.
Okay. So that basically I was saying that my understanding of what happened there was that they were going to go, march on the Abigail estate and fight and kill, I guess, the walkers that were, in the cellar. That's how I understood it. And she did a preemptive strike by basically poisoning them.
Yeah, she did.
Yeah. So that's how I understood it.
That's pretty much what I thought.
Yeah. Do you have anything else?
I was kind of, the only thing that really confused me that I didn't ever really figure out was, I mean, the priest looked bored. It's like, why does he look so bored when they're singing? I don't know. I thought that was kind of, maybe I was just misinterpreting his facial expressions, but to me.
No, you're not.
He looked bored.
That is typical for a Catholic mass.
Oh, okay.
No, I'm kidding.
No idea.
there's a lot there in the Catholic mass. There's a lot of like, standing up, sitting down, kneeling, you know, it's all like in a ritual. And I imagine that it can be a little bit, I've seen, you know, in the time I grew up Catholic and in my time where I was going to church every Sunday, I saw a lot of bored looking priests. So
that's terrible.
Including my cousin. So, yeah, it's one of those things. I don't know why. I can't explain it. I don't think it's anything to, it's just their stoicism, I guess.
Okay. Well, like I said, I had no idea. I thought, again, the first time I watched it, I thought, does he know what's about to happen? I mean, after I watched it and then I concluded that he kind of did have a bored look on his face. I thought, oh my gosh, did he set that up? But then I was like, no, it was her, whoever her is. And then I didn't figure out it was her until later on in the episode. And then I was like, oh.
Yes, Catholics, do not be offended by my comments. I will go to confession next time I go to church.
Whenever that may be.
Whenever that may be.
That's funny. I think that you shouldn't be offended just because you should not take offense so easily. So that's what I think. All right, let's move on to Act One.
Act One. Chris.
Chris.
Chris, 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 Chris. I'm going to say that many, many times in this episode. Chris, yeah. Chris, Chris.
Chris is in heavy denial.
He's very worried about how the rest of the family and the rest of the people feel about him. And yet, of course, as we see in this episode, his actions don't seem to fit that, do they?
Well, I think he is still concerned. I mean, he's a teenage boy, for one thing. So, of course, he's concerned about what they think about him. Because sometimes when you're a teenager, you don't necessarily have your stuff all figured out or whatever. So you don't really know who you are yet or who you want to be or whatever. So you kind of are always constantly looking for validation, I guess. And I kind of think that's sort of what he's doing. Because he's like, I mean, for one, he's asking, are they mad at me? Are they mad at me? I'm like, yeah, if you really thought you did the right thing, you wouldn't be that concerned about whether or not people were mad at you, I think. Maybe.
That's my take on it as well.
So I kind of feel like he knows that he did not do the right thing. And he's in heavy, heavy, heavy denial is what I wrote down. I was like, Chris, heavy denial.
Very heavy.
Is floating down the river and like, yeah, going at full speed ahead down the river denial.
Yeah. Denial ain't just a river in Egypt.
And if it is, Chris is heading full speed down it.
So we will talk more about Chris in a bit, but Then we have the guards coming up to the boat and the whole, how do you say asshole in Spanish? You grin and bear it.
Don't you grin and bear it.
Yeah. And then
so very Strand-like answer.
And then we see Strand, what happened? He says, someone said asshole in Spanish. Asshole
in Spanish.
I laughed.
That was funny. Yeah, that was hilarious. I thought that was so funny.
What do you think happened there? How did things go south?
Well, I think there was just an argument. And Strand says he doesn't like to discuss money. Clearly they're not going with the plan. The plan was Luis would go over there and then they would, you know, and he would pay them. Then he would come back. Well, they are changing the plan. So, you know, right there, I mean, that's big red flag warning to anybody probably that something ain't right. And I don't know if it's that these, the guards are wising up to the fact that money doesn't really do you any good anymore or something else completely. I don't know. I don't know why they, you know, decided to be jerk faces, but they did.
Yeah, I took it as a little bit of a shakedown that they were going to try to shake a little more gold bars out of it. And you notice that they went for gold and not currency, which I think was exactly the right thing to do.
Yeah, only makes sense.
Yeah. So then, of course, you know, we have, and I mentioned it in the awesome sauce, Daniel, he's very alert and he takes out the two Mexican authorities and was going to do the same to Luis, who was obviously dying. And they obviously did not kill Luis, which makes me wonder what happened to him. They must have. I don't know.
Well, he obviously turned and he's on his way back to his mama.
Yeah.
She thinks anyway.
Yeah. And then we get to this whole owl thing and Luis tries to give, Daniel this owl coin that,
gave it to,
oh, that's right. He gave
Ophelia.
It to
me. Well, Ophelia pulled it out of his pocket.
Okay.
Which I thought was weird. Why is she going through his pockets looking for loose change? He's not mostly dead.
Well, yet. He wanted that to give that to his mother, though.
Yeah, but he didn't bring it up until she yanked it out of his pocket. I was like, what the heck is she doing?
I have to watch that.
So. And then he's like, please give that to my mom. I was like, okay.
Yeah. And then Daniel, you know, kind of looks at it and he tosses it in the ocean. And I wondered, you know, why he did that. And I had to look at a couple of things. So I looked up owls and their significance. And supposedly this is true in a lot of Native American folklore, but it's also especially true for Aztecs and Mayans and other, as they're called, Mesoamerican natives, which Mesoamerica stretches into El Salvador. So of course, Daniel, I think, would know something about this, but owls are a symbol of death. And I looked
Santa
it up.
Santa Muerte, isn't it?
What's that?
Santa Muerte.
Santa Muerte? Yeah.
Santa Muerte.
Yeah. So anyway, I looked up a little more information today and found that showrunner, I mentioned it earlier, Dave Erickson, was interviewed by Entertainment Weekly. And Entertainment Weekly asked, so what's the deal with this weird owl face type thing we see on the coin Louise has and then carved into the tree? Is this her own little cult or something? And Erickson responds, not a cult so much. I think it's a religious extension, if you will. It speaks to her belief system. The owl represents something to her, to the folks that are on the compound, and possibly to other people outside of the compound. But it's a very specific, narrow belief system that Celia has, and it's something that she's embraced. And that's the representation of it. Huh. So, interesting.
Made me think of that, I can't remember, Sublime song. I don't practice Santeria.
Yeah.
Ain't got no crystal ball.
That's what I was taking as like Santeria, but I think that's...
It could be. I mean, it could be an offshoot of that.
Yeah.
So who knows? Yeah, I didn't really understand the owl thing until I watched Talking Dead, and then I was like, oh.
Yeah.
It's all becoming clear now. Sort of. Clear as mud. I thought, okay, when I was watching that scene with Daniel, I thought to myself, okay, does he recognize that owl coin? Does he know what's going on there? And does that, you know, is that setting off alarm bells in his head about where is this place that we're going to, you know, if that is his mom or whatever, you know?
That's what I kind of took it as, that he recognized it and he's like, oh, we don't want that. That's, you know, that means death and we don't want death.
It's like when we think of, or when we are like, you know, ooh, witchcraft, no.
Yeah.
Or something, maybe.
Yeah. That was my take on it, though.
I was a little mad, though, that Luis bit the dust. I like him. I like that actor.
I was, too.
He plays a bad guy a lot, so I was kind of glad that he was finally not really playing a bad guy so much.
I will miss his weird beard.
His weird beard and his Porsche.
I want that Porsche.
Yeah. I was a little disappointed that all it took to get, I mean, they just kind of busted right through the flotilla. I was like, okay. I mean, if it was that easy, then why were they so concerned?
Yeah. Yeah.
But
it was again, pretty easy.
Hand wave.
Yeah. That was kind of hand wave, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. It was like, oh no, they're shooting at us. Okay, we're through.
Oh, they those through. And then, you know, a few minutes later, somehow they're, you know, they've reached their destination, which I imagined, I don't know where exactly the estate is in Baja, but I had thought it was quite a bit further south. Couldn't have been right by Tijuana or something. It must have been quite a bit further south than that. What do you think?
I have no idea. I mean, Baja is long and narrow.
It is. So yeah.
Anybody's guess where they actually.
Hundreds of miles. I don't know exactly how long, but I've looked on it, you know, looked at it on the map, and it's certainly quite long.
It's not small.
No.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, again, maybe they were traveling on land for quite a while and they just didn't show it. Who knows?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, they could have been walking for a while until they found, I mean, they didn't go straight from boat to, oh, we're at the church. You know, they did kind of, I mean, you don't see them getting off the boat and walking up to the church is what I meant to say.
Right, right.
You know, like you don't. There was some missing stuff there. So they could have been walking for a while. Who knows, really? I mean, it's not like they had a Porsche to drive them to their destination. So.
Hand wave, like you said. Act two. So the first thing that I noticed with act two was the dog symbolism. We've seen in a few places, especially in Fear the Walking Dead, things with dogs. And here we see dogs again feeding on the dead. So.
Indeed.
Yeah. So that was one thing. Then, of course, soon after that, we see Thomas and, or sorry, not Thomas, but Strand go for Thomas and, or specifically, Thomas!
Yeah, I wrote down, after that cry for Thomas, I think there is no doubt that he was sincere in his feelings for
absolutely.
Thomas.
Absolutely.
So,
no doubt after that.
I really felt for him, too. That was a seriously worried cry, you know, because he saw the truck.
Yeah.
And we will just ignore the fact that the truck shouldn't have been there.
Hand wave.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, then we soon after see the fight. And, of course, these are, strangely enough, the same parishioners that were poisoned by Celia. And there are three, at least I counted, three significant things that happen in this fight. The first that I wrote down, I think this is in order, was Nick having to, and we didn't actually see it happen on camera, I'm not surprised, but Nick having to kill the girl.
Yep.
Yeah. And you could tell afterwards that he was very seriously affected by that. It really bothered him.
Yes.
And then Daniel. And, well, then, of course, as you mentioned, Ophelia, who finally, you know, showed her, you know, a little bit of warrior skills and not, you know, this like nurturer, what have you. And actually
damsel in distress.
Damsel in distress, and was actually, you know, in there, killing with everybody else and was doing a fine job there. But Daniel, and, you know, he holds up that, or maybe was the angle, I don't know, but of that one, choir boy, as you mentioned. It was Daniel's going through a thing right now. And
yeah,
we don't know completely yet what that thing is, but, like Jim Gaffigan said, and it's funny, the reaction on Talking Dead when he said this. Oh, by the way, I should mention this. If you get access to AMC.com, watch the video for, they do a little like post Talking Dead segment called Talking Dead. There was no real extra information given, but it was really funny. So, yeah, I recommend watching that if you can. Anyway, Jim's suggestion that it was a memory of him being held as a boy. And that was my take, because I didn't think that he would have done that to a boy. And just the look on the boy's face made me think that this was Daniel. And we agreed. So,
yeah, I thought it was Daniel as well.
Yeah.
I don't know necessarily what made me think that, but it was kind of just the impression that I got, I guess.
Yeah. I definitely got the same reaction. Then, wow, Chris, wow. This kid is messed up. If he did what we think he did, of course, he says that he didn't do it. He just froze.
Yeah.
But it didn't look that way to me. It looked like how Alicia saw it, and he just was simply going to let it happen to Madison. He's messed up. And as we see later on in the episode, he's really messed up.
Yeah, I could not tell based on the way the scene was shot necessarily if he, A, really was frozen, or B, if he really wanted Madison to die, or C, he was just kind of mesmerized.
Yeah. It could have been all of the above.
Yeah. Or something else entirely. Who knows? But in any case, I was like, oh dear. I wrote down, why did Chris hesitate? Is he mad at Madison? And I mean, like, if that's the case, if he hesitated because he's angry with her because she was talking to his dad about him shooting that guy, I mean, that's, we got problems.
We certainly do.
And I think, I mean, not to jump ahead too much, but I think that there are problems that are quite different from the problems that Nick was having.
Yes, definitely, definitely. So, I guess after that, we get to their arrival at the Abigail estate. And
yes,
they are welcomed by Celia and the rest of the people on the compound. What did you think of that?
Well, I thought it kind of seemed too good to be true. And if it seems too good to be true, it probably is. I mean, like, you know, they get there and they're like, oh, you have to give up your weapons. And most of them immediately do it. You know, they don't hesitate. They're just like, okay, here you go. Except for Daniel, who says, I think, has always been the most savage.
What, are you serious?
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Yeah.
I would have found a way to smuggle some crap on there. I'd have been like, mm-mm.
Yeah. Of course, we've seen this kind of thing before on the other show.
Oh, yeah. I mean, everybody always wants you to disarm first. And sometimes I get it. But other times I'm like, if it were me, I'd be like, no, I'm an American and we have guns.
Yeah. I
would have found a way to hide it on them. I would have been like,
I don't think it's an issue in Mexico either. But
yeah, but I mean, they don't have the same types of gun laws as we do. I mean, everybody there is. Not everybody. I mean, I don't want to stereotype. I have no idea how the people of Mexico are. I'm sure they are delightful, but I know how the gun laws are here, and I have often said, you're going to have to pry it out of my cold, dead fingers. And I would mean that wherever I was, especially in the zombie apocalypse. Like, lady, no. You think you don't need them here, but that's only until you do. So.
Yes, Ruthie is from a red state.
I'm a gun-toting American. That's right.
Yeah.
I grew up around guns, okay? I used to sit and watch my grandpa press bullets when I was a little girl. So, you know, they've always been a part of my life. It's only natural that I would have one after growing up to be a grown-up. Because that's what you do when you grow up. You become a grown-up.
once we get on the compound, of course, Victor searches for Thomas. And, of course, he finds him in his room, I guess.
Yeah, so sad.
Yeah. It was. And again, you know, you just have to melt seeing Strand's, you know, the tears coming down his face. And
yeah, he's crying.
Yeah.
So bad for him.
Yeah.
I just wanted to hug him.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know.
Poor thing. It'll be okay.
It's like I said, you know, after seeing that, I just felt like such a jerk for ever doubting that Strand wasn't sincere, you know, because he clearly was a love. And, you know, it's something I thought of. Do you remember from, you know, the episode where we first see Thomas, and Thomas describes himself as a parasite? And then when there's a couple people in this episode, I think, describe Thomas as a good man. So that tells me, it makes me wonder, you know, Strand and Thomas together, I think they, I don't know, improved themselves. Like they became better people. Yeah. They became better people together than they were separately. That was my take on it.
It's usually the sign of a healthy relationship.
Yeah. So there's all that. Things that I didn't realize until seeing that. So that's all I have for Act 2.
But I don't know if you noticed that Celia called Thomas Mijo, but...
What does that mean?
It is a term of endearment that is often reserved for children, for mothers to children, usually. Girls are Mija, boys are Mijo, and... usually it's something that mothers say to sons. And so she clearly, you know, thinks of him that way.
I think it was mentioned, you know, before by Luis that that his mother raised them both.
Yep.
You know, so, and they were like brothers. So yeah, that's good, because I didn't know what that meant, and I kind of didn't think about it as a result.
Well, I don't speak Spanish, but I've heard that numerous, numerous times, and that is the conclusion that I've drawn. Mm-hmm. So if I am actually wrong about that, please someone tell me what it actually means.
Yes. And the same goes for anything that we say in Spanish that we get wrong. I'm sure we will learn a little as we go if they stay in Mexico, but
not. I'm probably not going to learn any more Spanish than I already know. Which is not very much.
Yeah, I you know what? I just mean within the situation. Is that it?
Yep.
So then we have Act 3. And the first thing I put down was Chris asks Alicia, are you mad at me?
Mm-hmm. Back to that broken record again.
Yes. Are you mad at me? And...
Didn't we talk about, like, if you are not sure what the answer is, you probably don't want to know before? Like, don't ask questions you don't want to know the answer to. Because the answer to this question is yes, Chris. I'm mad at you. You tried to kill my mom by, you know, I guess, what's the word? Not by omission, but by, like, you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
By not doing anything.
By inaction.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yes, Chris. We're mad at you. We're all mad at you.
Have every right to be mad at him. And quite honestly, I, like I said before, and I'll say later, I don't know what is going inside of his head, but it's not good.
Yeah, I feel like he's a little psychopath in training. Like, seriously. Exactly. Oh my God.
going to play that later, but we went there, so I played it now.
Yeah, man. I'm telling you, that's what I was thinking. I was like, either he is, I don't know, having some kind of emotional something, or he really is going to be like, he's a little serial killer in training or something.
Yeah.
It's like, I mean, like the minute someone tells me or tries to make me like, you didn't see what you thought you saw, I'm like, I will start to cuss you, because I'll be like, no, I have had too many times in my life when people have tried to make me doubt myself. And there are not very many things that will piss me off more than if someone tries to make me doubt myself. And I'm like, I just, no. So that instantly I was mad at him. I was like, no, you little something I shouldn't say.
Well, it's, you know, and it's more than being mad at him. I mean, there's like, what is going on with you? You are doing things that are beyond, you know, me being mad at you. I'm like, I don't know what to make of you anymore.
Yeah.
To
Alicia. Oh, it was definitely a threat.
I don't want to hurt anyone.
Yeah, exactly. I don't want anyone to get hurt, I think. Oh, no. He says, I don't want to hurt anyone.
Yeah.
I'm like, so what you're saying is, if I do tell people what I know I saw, you're going to have to hurt someone? It's like,
not good.
Yeah, that is, you know, a rather, I would not say it's an overt threat so much as a covert threat, I guess, but still clearly a threat.
Definitely a threat.
So I don't know, man. I don't know what's going on with him. I don't know. Mm.
It is, I don't know what to say about him, except he's going down a very troubling road.
Yeah. To me, I wrote down he's disconnected from reality. I don't think that he has somehow become, I guess, dislodged from consequences.
Yeah.
You know, like he no longer associates actions and consequences the way that he should, you know,
That's a good assessment. I hadn't thought of it that way, but that's a good assessment of it.
Which is what a psychopath does. Yes. Oh my.
Madison versus Celia.
Yes.
So
see a clash coming.
It starts with Nick actually coming over to, I guess he was going into the kitchen and Celia was in there, and, you know, a nice little pleasant conversation.
Sort of.
Yeah. Yeah. And she gives him pozole, which I believe is a stew or a special soup for special occasions. That's what I read up on it. Well, that it is. And of course, he enjoyed it. She's a wonderful cook. That's what they said. Although I don't know if I'd want to eat any of it, because it might
be poison. No doubt. Yeah. Like, watch for the poison wafers.
Yes. But anyway, so, you know, then Madison comes in and tells him, you stink, go take a shower, which he goes and takes a shower, and yet his hair does not improve.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on with that kid's head.
Yeah.
His hair was quite a bit shorter in the pilot well.
Yeah,
I don't know if you noticed in the little flashbacks. Notice,
and it wasn't as greasy.
Yeah, I don't understand what is with the constant slicked back thing, but.
I don't know. So, Celia says, you know, your boy is, what did she say specifically?
Well, she said it was a beautiful name for a beautiful boy.
And
she said that he was special.
Yeah, that's right. Special.
And then Madison says fragile. And she's like, and
impressionable.
She said, yeah. And she said, like, Celia said another word. I can't remember what it was though, but they kind of went back and forth with the whole, like, you know, and I mean, Celia's not the only one that has noticed Nick's, you know, specialness, I guess, or whatever. But to her, he's always been, you know, well, she said he was fragile and, you know, she needs to protect him or whatever. And
right.
I just wonder if, you know, everything that she's been doing has necessarily been the best for him, you know.
Right. Some
like,
codependent.
I know you have good. Yeah. I'm like, I know you've got good intentions, but.
Yeah.
sometimes
need to let them fall, you know. So yeah, I mean, this conversation did not make Madison likable to me. I've heard a lot of people say that they don't like Madison's character, and I haven't really felt that way. You know, I didn't love her, I didn't hate her, and I don't hate her, but I didn't like the things that she was saying. I mean, yes, I understand where she's coming from. She's certainly focusing on the past. You know, she's had to deal with this addiction for years, but she doesn't seem to see the potential, the gifts that Nick has. And, Nick, if he can get over some of the problems that he's had, he has a bright future, particularly, I think, in this crazy apocalypse time.
Yeah. While I agree that I don't think that it necessarily made Madison very likable, I don't think that it necessarily won Celia any points either.
True.
Because to me, they were both kind of like,
meow. Yeah. Bit of a cat fight there. Yeah.
Yeah. Just a little bit.
Yeah. And, I didn't have much of a chance to process that, because the next thing we get into is Daniel at that tree, and he comes across, across Celia, and, I think he said, sorry for your loss. And she comes back, says, why? You didn't shoot.
He's not lost.
Yeah. You didn't shoot him in the head, did you? And he's like, no.
Yeah. Slowly like, no. Crazy person says, what?
Yeah. And then clearly he kind of, do you think that this had something to do with his not wanting to eat later? Or was it the other thing?
I have not thought about that, but that could be very well the case, that he's like, I ain't touching nothing, this lady cook. She crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. Tell them I'm tired.
Yeah. Don't tell them that I suspect that she's trying to get us to drink the Kool-Aid.
Made me think, afterwards that it might have had a factor. I mean, it was probably maybe a combination of the things that he's been dealing with.
Sure.
As well as his reaction to, Celia's belief system, which
and he misses his wife.
Yeah. Yeah. And, was it here that she said something like, you need to make peace with your
dead. That was later.
That was later. Mm-hmm. Okay. That's what I thought. Madison goes and takes some lunch or dinner to Thomas and Strand.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a kick out of
when, do we like her?
Yeah. Do we like her? And Strand responds, she's fierce.
Yep.
Yeah.
I think there's mutual respect there, honestly.
I totally agree with that. There was a very uneasy relationship between the two of them, but now I think at this point there definitely is a respect and an admiration, I think.
Yeah, I think they're on the same team now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whereas maybe in the beginning they might not have been. But I don't know. I've thought that before, but then they've come back with the whole saying or doing something that makes me think, really? Still not on the same team?
Yeah.
Like the whole, you get a half a day. And I'm like, a half a day for saving your life?
Yeah.
Okay, I guess. I mean, whatever. Not that Luis wouldn't have done it, but she's the one who did. So.
Well, I tend to think that it was, that it built over time. Maybe at that time it wasn't as tight as it is now.
Yeah, I guess, but still, I'm kind of like, okay, if you guys are whatever.
Yeah. But I got a kick out of when Thomas asks Madison to look after him. Will you look after him when I'm gone?
Yep.
And her response, like, he won't make it. He'll make it difficult or something like that. Won't make it easy.
Why do you think I'm asking you?
I thought that was really, really good.
And very telling. I mean, I think he needs, so to speak, to not to put too strong a metaphor on it, but he needs a heavy hand at the tiller.
Yeah.
Yep. It's my goddamn boat.
That's right.
So then we basically, Alicia tells Madison what she saw Chris not do. And,
She said why she was scared. Cause Madison was like, why are you scared this time?
Yeah.
Cause she said the reason why we, or why I was like that, because I was afraid you weren't coming back. And so she's like, well, why are you scared now? I mean, Madison, I mean, she was a freaking guidance counselor for crying out loud. She's pretty intuitive.
Right. And, you know, then we had a pretty interesting argument, I guess, disagreement between Madison and Travis.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he brought up, you know, I was there for you. And, you know, he's at a point where he desperately needs help from Maddie, and you know, she almost didn't seem to be willing to give it.
Well, she is definitely in protector mode, you know. I mean, and I think we kind of touched on this earlier. I don't think that their issues are the same.
No.
You can help someone through addiction. You can't help someone through being a psychopath. So
yeah.
It's really hard to do.
Yeah. Mental illness is not something you can talk through. So definitely would have to agree with that. But still, I kind of felt for Travis there because, you know.
Oh, I did too. I mean, I totally get where he's coming from. But then at the same time, I'm like, you need to understand that your child has a problem. Okay. Don't put your blinders on. All right. You know, and I don't know whether or not I believe Chris froze or whatever. I don't really think so.
I don't either.
You know, you know, there's a pattern of past behavior that has shown that he's kind of going down this path, you know? And I don't know what necessarily set him on the path or whatever, but you know, if this is just something that he's going through or if he's acting out or whatever, then yeah, you might be able to help him out of it or whatever, or talk to him and, you know, whatever, all that kind of stuff. But I mean, like I said, I feel like he is disconnected from reality, and that is a problem. When you start not equating your actions with the consequences that those actions bring, that's a problem. You know, I can't stress it enough. And I feel like perhaps, I don't know. I mean, I think Maddie might be, I mean, not that she's necessarily overreacting very much, but she's going immediately to the, you know, I need to protect my daughter mode instead of, you know, maybe I should try and help Chris kind of a thing, you know, or help, did I say Chris?
You did.
Okay. Yeah. Maybe I should try and help Chris, you know, help Travis, help Chris, whatever. You know, I mean, I don't know. It's hard. And I think this is the main problem that most blended families will have, is that one or both of them will, you know, eventually revert to my child kind of a thing, just like she did there. And I'm like, you cannot, you know, you can't really think of it that way. I think it has to be ours. If we're really going to, you know, if we're really going to do this, we're really going to make it work, then it has to be our children, this, that, and whatever, you know, you have to do things together. And I'm not saying it's easy to do. I mean, it's hard, but then again, everything worth doing is hard. So.
And Travis, I think, looks at family as more than blood. He's there. Maddie is still in that protective mode. And, you know, I think in a normal circumstance, she would be helping Chris. But, you know, certainly, you know, she's a guidance counselor, for Pete's sake. I mean, this is what she, counseling is what she did, you know. So.
Yeah, but still, I think that she, honestly, I think that she will always, I think she would always be in that my child mentality kind of a thing. I don't think that she, you know, it's easier to mask that when you're not in this kind of a situation, I think, but I don't see her as ever being as pragmatic about it, I guess you could say, as Travis is.
Yeah.
You know, for Travis, I see that. Travis really does think of, you know, Alicia like a daughter.
Yeah.
You know, does. which is what makes him a good parent, I think. Not that Madison is a bad parent, but I think that's what makes him a good, like a good male role model for her. because, you know, you're never going to get that. It was kind of creepy when he hugged me, you know, thing from him.
Right.
Which, you know, is terrifying, but does happen sometimes, you know, and I don't know if it's because of things that have happened in Madison's past that she's, you know, not going to be able to ever really, you know, do that. Or, I mean, and I don't know that she, it's not that I think that she doesn't think of Chris like a son, but I just think that she doesn't really think of Travis as Alicia's parent.
Right. Yeah, I would agree with that. And he's definitely there. I mean, he brings up all the things that he did, you know, to help Nick, and he was there for Nick, and he definitely, I mean, we saw it ourselves. He was there for Nick. He was great. You know, as a step parent, you know, you couldn't really ask much more from him. And originally, as this was going on, I'm thinking to myself, you know, you're really taking Alicia's side to an extreme here. Chris needs some help right now.
Yeah.
That was my initial thought until Act 5. And then I realized that, I guess her instincts were correct.
Maybe. I still don't have any idea what was going on there with the knife. I mean, he seemed genuinely, you know, like, I don't know. Like I don't know. I have no idea. I don't have no idea what's going on in that kid's head. And I just, for crying out loud. I don't know. I can't explain it. It didn't really seem like he was going to try and stab them in their sleep to me. But then at the same time, I'm like, what the hell are you doing, weirdo?
Yeah, more on that in a bit. Do you have anything else for Act 3?
No, I just wrote down that it seems like Travis and Madison are fracturing. And I don't know.
There's definitely a lot of, it's difficult in that situation, I think, to, you know, to keep things together, you know, so there's a lot of stress there.
Yeah, for real.
Yeah.
And I don't know, it's going to be too hard to determine, you know, what's really going on, I think, right now, anyway, you know, I mean, I don't know. It's hard. I think that Travis just doesn't necessarily see what's happening with Chris. I think he could be, you know, could be a little bit, he could be in denial a little bit, you know, like, because he says something along the lines of that's crazy or that's ridiculous or something like that, basically indicating that such a thing is completely implausible when we all know it's not.
Well, I understand where he's coming from. You know,
well, sure. That's his child, his baby.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, don't tell me to doubt what I saw with my own two eyeballs.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
I do.
And I mean, Travis and Alicia haven't spoken about it. You know, it's just Alicia telling Madison right. telling Travis, kind of a thing. And that's how, you know, it could be lost in translation, so to speak.
True.
So,
right.
Again, but still, I think he's maybe got blinders on a little bit.
Well, and plus, you know, he started talking to Chris before, but it didn't, you know, they didn't finish that conversation. And, you know, obviously they haven't had, like you say, they haven't had a chance to talk about this incident.
Yeah.
Although I have a feeling that they will be talking next episode.
For sure. But, I mean, even still, it's kind of like, well, when they were talking, you know, did it seem like Travis was believing what he said about, you know, he was sick, he was going to turn? Or is he, you know, basically it's kind of like the worst situation you ever want to be in as a step parent. Do I believe my significant other or do I believe my child? You know, it's kind of like, I mean, here's this kid. He's basically begging his dad to take his side. And it's kind of like, well, do I? Should I?
It didn't seem to me like in that initial conversation that he was taking Chris's side. I think he had his own doubt. And, you know, he said, Madison's worried about you. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I have to think that he had his own doubt that, you know, was he really turning? I mean, that was my take on it.
Yeah, I just don't know, you know. I don't know. I don't know what Chris is thinking. I don't know what Travis is thinking. So I'm like, what are you people thinking?
Mm-hmm.
Give us more clues, more facial expressions, something.
Moving on to Act 4, Strand makes the offer to die along with Thomas.
A very Shakespearean.
Yes. Which I thought was a beautiful gesture that I also had some doubts about. What did you think about that?
Well, I thought it was indeed very Shakespearean.
Yeah.
But what I wrote down was, I just don't see Strand, you know, just doesn't seem like that's his bag, you know? That right. doesn't really, I mean, very Shakespearean is an excellent way to put it, you know, like very...
romantic.
Well, I was going to say teenage drama romantic, you know, like yeah. it's the end of the world, I'll die without you kind of a thing. And so therefore we've got this suicide pact.
Right.
Not exactly how it went down in Romeo and Juliet, but, you know, they kind of did. It was kind of life or death with them, you know, it was right. like, you know, we have to do this or else I'll die kind of a thing, you know. I mean, like, when you're a teenager, everything seems like it's, you know, or I'll die, you know, because you are too young to know any better, I guess. I don't know. I want to piss off people thinking I hate teenagers. I don't hate teenagers. They're just very teenagery. Oh, man. I mean, you know, you just, some people never really, I mean, some people grow up, but they don't grow up emotionally. You know, they don't really ever get to that point as an adult where you can, you know, get a little perspective. I think that's kind of, you know, what really about getting older is about. It's getting a little bit of perspective and understanding that, no, your life really will not end if, you know, this, that, or whatever happens kind of a thing. But, you know, some people, like I said, some people never, mature in that way, I guess, you know, and so I don't know, but like I said, I like teenagers. Don't send me hate mail.
And I had a very good teenage thing, so I wasn't hateful like the one review said.
Well, man, I had rough teenage years, but you know, I'm 40 now, so I have a completely different perspective. Yeah.
So then we see something that was kind of disturbing. Daniel is walking around the compound and he sees that kid. I think his name was Juan, right? I think his name's Juan.
Sure. I think that's right.
I think his name was Juan. He drops that poor dog down the chute and the noises it made.
Yes. It was very dun dun dun.
Yeah.
I felt so bad for the little pooch. I knew right then. I knew immediately what was going on. I was like, oh crap.
Yeah.
And I wrote down, oh, they have infected in the cellar and are feeding them because they have not accepted that they are dead and reanimated, not sick. Herschel's farm.
Well, it's similar to Herschel's farm, but not quite the same.
Similar,
because
close enough.
Because Herschel believed that they were just sick.
Right.
Whereas Celia acknowledged that they were dead, but she just considered them to be in, you know, in the next phase or something like that. Basically, I think she said somewhere that, you know, we've always seen the dead have always walked among us, but now we can see them. I don't know where exactly she says that, but, you know, this is,
she said it.
Yeah. But, of course. And we'll kind of, it makes sense to, keep on Daniel. I think at this point, Daniel, you know, walks over and hears Juan talking in the cellar. And of course, you know, he's asking like, well, who are you talking to? And he says, to my mommy.
Yep.
And then we find out that,
oh, can you introduce me to your mommy?
Yes.
Oh my gosh. I thought Daniel was very, very wise in not reacting when he saw, you know, what was happening. Because, I mean,
you know, kids, I mean, they absorb stuff. And yeah. I think if he had freaked out, that kid would have been like, oh my gosh, what's wrong? What's happening? You know, kind of a thing. And it would have, I think it would have made the situation just like 1,000 times worse. So he didn't. He just kind of observed with that, you know, cold calculating stare that he has. But I thought that was, you know, very well played on his part that he did not, you know, oh my gosh, what are you doing? And then run off and be like, they're keeping them in the cellar. You know, didn't have one of those freak outs. Exactly. So
new sound effect, classic.
Yep.
Yeah. So anyway, then he confronts Celia and you know, the whole thing about, you know, she says they wanted to kill him and she's like, over my dead body.
Yeah. Treating them like they were monsters. And I'm like, they are monsters.
And then, you know, he realizes, you know, I guess when he sees the host, the communion, that, that she poisoned them.
Yep. But she says, no, I didn't kill them. You did.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my gosh. And I think I wrote down at that point in time. So Celia is the her. She is crazy and dangerous. Not a good combo.
Very dangerous. Yes.
Yeah. Crazy and dangerous equals very much.
Very appropriate this episode.
Exactly. Yeah. Lots of little psychopaths around.
Yep. Yeah. Deeply disturbing the whole thing. I mean, because like I say, Herschel, I thought, had good intention. You know, Herschel thought that they were sick, that they could eventually be cured. Whereas Celia, you know, she just looks at them as, you know, they're we keep our dead, you know. It just I was very disturbed by what I was hearing, and you know, it was hinted all the way through.
Mm-hmm.
And it certainly helped me understand the cold open.
Yeah. And if you go back to, I mean, yeah, you can understand the cold open better, but also if you go back to the boat, you completely understand now why Luis is like, no, 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 don't stab me in the head.
Yeah.
Which I was kind of like thinking to myself, okay, he's thinking, you know, I'm not dead yet.
Yeah. Yeah, and to that.
Okay, did you not get my Monty Python reference?
I didn't.
I'm not dead yet.
Oh, that. Okay. We're here for your liver. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, you know, you're thinking at the time, he's like, oh, you know, I don't want to die. I don't want to die kind of a thing. But no, in fact, it was, oh, just don't stab me in the head and give my creepy owl coin to my mom.
Yeah. And you know, it again puts the meaning, if when you go back and you hear the things that Luis had said, it puts it in a whole different context that, yeah, she'll survive anything because to her, it's no big deal to die, you know?
Yeah. And she even says to Daniel, why are you so afraid of death?
Yeah.
I'm like, well, most people, I mean, don't necessarily fear death, but certainly don't, you know, look forward to it.
Yeah.
I don't know. I was just kind of like, what sane person wouldn't fear death, especially in this kind of a world, you know? I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm like, cuckoo, cuckoo.
How do you think they collected all those walkers?
That's exactly what I was wondering. And how exactly did she plan on doing that with, you know, Strand and Thomas? I guess she's got, you know, her big strapping farm hands or something that are going to, whatever.
Yeah. Come on, come this way. Send them down the chute.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've got a nice, juicy puppy dog for you.
All right.
Poor puppy. So
going back to the owl, there's that whole thing about, I got a kick out of Nick's reaction, you know, oh, when a girl doesn't tell you where they're going, it's always Jesus.
Taking you to Jesus. That was hilarious.
Yeah, it was funny. And he got a little freaked out there, saw Gloria and, you know, the church and the pilot.
Yeah, that was the last time he had been to church.
Yeah.
If that were the last time I'd been to church, I think I probably would not have had very good memories.
I was going to say, that's not the kind of church that I would want to be at.
No doubt.
Definitely not.
All right. So speaking of Nick,
What do you think was with all those flashbacks that he was having? And like he was staring at the owl and he's having those flashbacks and everything. And then he goes looking for Celia again. And he, I can't, this might be in 5. I can't remember. I might be skipping ahead, but, he says to her, well, she says to him, well, you have returned to me. And I was like, oh, this is not good.
Yeah.
She is definitely trying to get her hooks in him. So does he really believe that they're not dead? Like, what makes him think this? Why does he draw this conclusion? Or do you think he's just trying to butter her up? I mean, based on what we saw in the previews, it doesn't really seem like he's trying to be deceptive with her. What did you think?
My reaction when he said that, before her reaction, was, hell yes, they're dead.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah. And she says, you know, they are what comes next. And no, I didn't think he was being deceptive at all, but it makes me wonder, okay, well, what does this mean for him? You know, does he think that he's somehow immune to them going forward?
I don't know.
We will not know until next week.
I mean, maybe. Why would he think that is what I was mainly, you know, was my main question. Like, why does he think that? What has led him to this conclusion? Why? I mean, is it his experiences out walking in the street?
I think so.
Or, I mean, because, dude, they tried to kill you and eat you. They tried to eat you. That's not sick, dude. That's dead.
Yeah, I tend to think that he is coloring it with the, you know, impressions that he's had being covered with blood. And, you know, that's, he can walk among them because he smells like them, not because he is immune to them. And I think if he's going to try to test that, he's going to find out that he's wrong.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know that I necessarily thought that he was immune or anything. I don't know. I don't have any idea why he thinks the way that he does. It makes no sense to me.
Mm-hmm. Got anything for 4 besides that?
So what do you think about Strand's offer to, you know, accompany him in death? Do you think that he was just telling him what he needed to hear, or did he just change his mind at the last minute? Was he being deceptive, or was he, you know, being merciful, I guess, as they said on Talking Dead? I think that's the question that they asked.
And, you know, Celia, you know, says, you know,
oh, she's going to be mad.
Oh, is she ever going to be mad? The wrath, I said in my note, in the notes here, the wrath of Celia is about to follow in the next episode for sure. I think that initially when he said it, he was being sincere, but he had second thoughts. And, you know, when the time came that what he realized that he really, really needed to do was to make sure that Strand didn't suffer that fate. Thomas didn't suffer that fate. I think that I noticed, you know, when there was a reaction on Strand's face when I think something that Celia said to him, which kind of made me think that he was wavering a little bit, you know. And the other thing, of course, is that, you know, maybe he realized with Celia's actions what this was going to mean. Maybe he realized that she was going to keep them as walkers, you know, in the cellar, and he didn't want to be that. I wouldn't want to be that.
I don't think that he necessarily knew about the cellar.
No.
And I don't think that it was ever his intention to kill himself. And the reason why is because he tells Thomas, he says, you know, this world was never good enough for you or whatever. Just let it go.
Yeah.
But Thomas says, I don't want to leave you. And so I think that, to me, I think it was not a deceptive act so much as it was a merciful act of him, you know, basically telling Thomas what he needed to hear in order to, you know, basically release himself or to let go of, you know, to be Shakespearean, to put off this mortal coil, you know, so that he could, I mean, you know, just like he said, let go.
Yeah.
Basically. I mean, don't, you know, your struggle is over, whatever kind of a thing. You don't have to
you don't have to fight anymore kind of a thing. I don't know. I just, that was the impression I got, because to me, I don't think that Strand would ever, ever do something like that. I don't think that he would ever, ever, ever enter into like a suicide pact or whatever. That's just not him. That's,
well, he did. He just wasn't, had no intention of carrying it out.
Following through.
I think you're right. I think that you are right, that he didn't intend to go through with it, that it was an act of like just telling, having for Thomas to hear what he needed to hear.
Yeah. I mean, because I think he really did love him, and he did not want him to be suffering anymore, because it's, you know, it's clear that he was suffering. And, you know, I think that he was still trying to, you know, look out for him, basically. And just, you know, I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I think.
I was kind of disappointed that we will not see him again.
Yeah. I like Doug Ray Scott.
Yeah. I think that, you know, maybe we'll see him in flashbacks or something, but clearly we won't.
He's definitely not coming back, because, Oh man, Celia gonna be mad.
She ever gonna be mad?
So mad. Yeah. That's immediately what I thought when I heard that gunshot and I saw the room. I was like, oh crap, she's gonna be pissed.
Yeah, I had the same reaction.
I'm pretty sure everybody probably is thinking the same thing. Oh crap, Celia's going to be mad. And she is not the kind of woman that you want to piss off. Crazy and dangerous. Not good. Not good combo. Very much bad.
And of course, you know, before we hear that gunshot go off, we see Chris.
Creepster Chris.
Who walks into that bedroom where Madison and Alicia are, and sees that knife. And picks it up, and this is where the sound was originally supposed to come in.
Well, I guess the appropriately named psycho.
I have to say, that is what I thought. That music popped into my head when he picked up that knife. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they...
I don't know. I didn't necessarily think that he had, you know, bad intentions, but
why would he pick up the knife, though?
I don't have any idea why he would have picked up the knife, but I don't think that he picked up, like, went in there and picked up the knife so that he could stab them. What if they didn't have a knife in there? Poorly thought out plan.
and then, you know, they wake up and, you know, they see him and they're like, Chris, get out of here. And he's kind of like, Oh, and then he runs out, you know?
Yeah, he's like, okay. Oh, man. I don't know. See, I don't have any idea what's going on. I don't think that he went in there with the intention of stabbing them. I don't know why he went in there. I think he went in there and he saw the knife and was like, ooh, shiny.
Yeah, I don't know. I tend to think that he didn't have good intentions, you know, because he gets up. He leaves his dad, you know, sleeping in the bed next to him. And, you know, he goes, why would he go into the room? I mean, you know, when he sees them sleeping, why would he go in there? It's just so creepy. And, you know, and he goes for that knife. And I mean, yeah, I don't know what to make of it, except the music.
Creepster.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, maybe he... You know, maybe he did have ill intentions and he was planning on doing some kind of bodily harm. But again, what would he do if there were not a knife there? I mean, did he know there was going to be a knife there? I don't have any idea. But I don't know. I don't think that he's there yet, is all, I guess. I don't know, though. But I was surprised that we didn't see Travis, for one thing. Like, maybe they'll show him at the very beginning of the next episode or something. I'm like,
yeah.
But I was surprised that he didn't, A, hear the gunshot, and B, hear them screaming at Chris. You know, I mean, because they were screaming, Chris, what are you doing? Get out of here.
Well, not much time passed there. It was, you know, I'm not surprised that we didn't see Travis, because.
I know, it's unreasonable for me to think that. But still, I was like, why didn't Travis come bursting in when he heard, you know, heard his women folk hollering at his, you know, son, basically, after they had this big old conversation. I don't know. I mean, you know, I don't know. Like I said, probably not realistic that he would have. I mean, I don't know. I don't know which room he was sleeping in. Were they sleeping in like next door rooms or something? Who knows?
Know.
You know, I mean, all kinds of things. But still, that's immediately what I was thinking. Like, where's Travis? Why isn't he, you know, basically, I'm like, why isn't he there to witness his son being creepy?
So true. Yeah, it seems like whenever,
like, because if you need more proof, here it is.
It's kind of funny. It's like whenever Chris is being kind of creepy or doing some strange things, Travis is nowhere to be found.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's, I like, guess,
where were you when he was, you know, shooting some kid in the head? Oh, that's right, you were off being kidnapped.
Plot device.
Where were you when Chris was breaking into, you know, Alicia's room, basically
sleeping?
Alicia and Maddie's room. Oh, yeah. You were somewhere else. Not. I don't know. I just thought it was funny, though. I was like, man. And kind of what I was thinking was, boy, he better come busting in there at the very beginning scene of next episode. Because, I mean.
Yeah.
You know, if you're already. If someone has already told you, hey, man, your son is being creepy. And then you hear someone screaming at your son in the middle of the night. I mean, I would go running. Personally, I would be like, I want to see the creepy in action. I want to see with my own eyes so that I can know, yes, he is in fact being creepy.
I think there is no question that he was being creepy.
Well, no question in our minds, but I mean, you know, Chris ran off before Travis could get there and watch his son being creepy so that he knows that it actually is a problem.
Yeah. I think the two of them have to ask this question.
What the hell is happening?
I have no idea.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
All right. Well, I think it's time for feedback, don't you?
Yep.
All right. So let's start with Kyle. He says, OMG, OMG. Well, if you wanted to know how Strand really felt, was he gay or gay for pay? I think those tears were the answer. And holy crap, Nick killing a child and not okay with that.
Yeah.
This show keeps getting better, in my opinion. And then he says, I'm not going to say much right now, but wow. Wow, I'm really liking where the show is going. Yes, I could say this is season two, The Walking Dead in the barn, you know, in the farm on the whatever. But with this crew, and I guess Kyle meant to give some more comment today, but he didn't. So, oh well. You can always send it later and we'll post it next episode.
Yep, we'll get it later. Okay, Malika says, well, I certainly was on edge pretty much 99% of the episode. I thought my eyeballs were going to pop out of my head and my jaw was going to detach from my face from all of the OMG that happened. This was definitely a superior episode. I don't think I breathed right for the rest of the act after the kid put the dog down the cellar chute. Just like The Walking Dead, you can't have nice things. No two ways about it. You think you'll get to a safe haven and see your most precious loved ones. Sure, but you can only have one of those things for a brief period of time, and then the second will have to go eventually as well. So touching and sad, the scenes between Tom and Victor. Chris is freaking me the heck out. I'm so glad things have stepped up so much since the beginning of this season. I'm legitimately anxiously awaiting the next episode.
Yeah, I would totally agree. I mean, it's been getting pretty much, you know, along a curve, getting consistently better as we've been going.
Going along like gangbusters.
Yeah. Next, it's Debbie. And Debbie says, had to look up the meaning of sicut servus. I hope I said it right. Very interesting.
Chervus.
Chervus. That's right. Oh, well. Very interesting. Great episode. Nick and Daniel were superb. Difficult scene with kid zombies to kill. So sad for Victor and Tom. Poor Chris is very troubled. The mother Celia is creepy. The help is too. Great episode overall.
Yeah. She is definitely the creepy matriarch. Okay, we got a comment on our blog post from Jeff420. He says, I loved Fear the Walking Dead this week. The story is just so well written. I thought it was going to get boring as soon as they went into that safe house. But no! The apocalypse has completely taken over these survivors' minds and they can't control it. They're all losing it. Chris wanting to kill Alicia, Chris was going to let Madison die, Nick now thinks the walkers are still living people. Definitely can't wait for next week's episode. It's going to be super great.
All right. And finally, we have Dieta. She says, okay, so Madison has been working my nerves since the last episode. Why is she acting like she still has to shelter them, the kids, from the reality of their situation? She needs to let them learn how to protect themselves and to survive just in case she doesn't make it. I know this was the last episode, but why, when you had a gun, would you allow Travis to fight that guy on the dock? And why did she lie and tell Travis Chris killed the guy with the crowbar in the gut? Oh, okay. She's talking about the last episode. So, okay. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was going to die and turn eventually. He was losing blood. Hell, I was surprised he lasted that long. Why did Travis say that everybody know you killed him to Chris, then say it was Madison? Chris is going cuckoo, but he's not the only one losing it. Daniel is seeing things. Nick is spazzing out as well. I believe life in the apocalypse is taking its toll on them. I just want to know who made Madison the leader of this group, because I'm not feeling it. I kind of dug Celia. She was only telling her truth, but to poison all those people to keep them from coming after her stash of walkers was cruel and stupid. You just added to the Walking Dead, LOL. Mm-hmm. Overall, a great episode. The ish is going to hit the fan when Strand doesn't kill himself, which he didn't.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think to her, it's not cruel and stupid. She just sees it as, you know, another step in the evolution of man or something like that. I don't know. So she does not see it that way. So for her, it's not cruel.
Yeah.
She's clearly crazy.
Yeah. And poisoning, you know, all those people. I mean, that's a little out there.
Yeah. You know? Well, I mean, to, you know, from her perspective, villains never think they're the villains. And I really think she is about to be the villain.
Definitely. Crazy.
Yes. Crazy pants.
Crazy people.
She is the very definition of bat crap crazy.
That definitely got a lot of use this episode. All right. Well, that is the end of our feedback this week. If you want to submit feedback, especially if you want to submit audio feedback, go to goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback. And most of our feedback, although we got one that didn't come in that way this time, most of our feedback comes in through Facebook, our wonderful Facebook group. And if you're not a member of that Facebook group,
what, are you serious?
And that, of course, is facebook.com/groups/walkingdeadgsm. And just join us. Come and join us. As soon as we get the application that you want to join us, we let you in. And there's a lot of great discussions on that Facebook group. And I think a lot of the reason why our podcast is as good as it is because of that Facebook group. So
yeah,
definitely. And it really means a lot to us as well to interact with everybody. The deadline, of course, for submitting feedback is 6 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Central, the Tuesday after the episode is aired, which if we can fit you in before we're done our recording Tuesday nights, we try to get you in, but realistically, that's our deadline.
And what he meant to say was, if we happen to see that you gave us feedback before we finish recording, we'll throw it in there, but we don't always see it.
That's a very.
But we'll get it in there sometime.
Yes. Yeah. And if you don't make deadline, we'll get you in the next week. But this will be our last episode for a while, I think, after next week.
Oh, I was going to say, well, we do have next week, right? So
next week. But next week is our last episode for a while. So
yes,
on either podcast, because we are going to take a well-deserved break.
Yeah.
We're tired.
Yeah. I mean, if you think about it, 16 episodes of The Walking Dead and 15 of Fear, that is 31 episodes for crying out loud. That's more than a typical 22 or even 25 episode season of other TV. I am feeling it, man. Woo.
Yeah.
Not that I don't enjoy what I'm doing, but sometimes I want to sleep.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, at the same time, you know, I've been really busy at work and, you know, I need to work, yep. You know, so.
And sleep.
We will take a little break. At some point, we'll be back probably during the hiatus and do, you know,
yeah,
a review. But
yeah. Content. We've got stuff in mind, yeah. Stuff and things.
Yeah. We do have stuff
to do stuff and things with.
We definitely will do something, but we'll have a little break. But anyway, you will hear us next week.
Yeah, next week for sure.
To support us, the best way that we've found is to, well, it's like that old commercial. You've got, you know, you tell two friends and so on and so on and so on. We see us post on Facebook or Twitter, which is Walking Dead GSM. We didn't say that. You know, share our posts. But an iTunes rating or review is probably the best way to get the word out and to help us stand ahead of the many Walking Dead podcasts, which are so many to count. I keep finding more every time I look. So GoldenSpiralMedia.com/iTunes will link you to all of the Golden Spiral Media podcasts. And you can subscribe. If you don't subscribe to us, please subscribe. Didn't say that. On iTunes or whatever podcast client that you use. Our next episode for Fear the Walking Dead, Season 2, Episode 7, is Shiva.
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 I'm pretty sure it's Shiva.
Yeah.
As in sitting Shiva.
See, there is a character on The Walking Dead who is Shiva. Same spelling. But that's probably Shiva. You're probably right. Written and directed by TBD, our venerable unnamed writer and director.
Prolific.
The description per AMC.com is, our family faces their greatest test yet. Nick, Travis, Madison, and others go to great lengths to keep each other close. So it's going to be good.
Interesting. It's going to be exciting.
And this is it for this episode. But until next time, I'm Brian.
And I'm Ruthie.
And this is
Fear the Walking Dead Talk Through.
Good night, everybody.
Bye.
Are you a podcaster who loves creating great content but gets overwhelmed by the audio editing process? Are you a business professional or an entrepreneur that wants to start a podcast but aren't sure where to begin? You need Pro Podcast Solutions. Pro Podcast Solutions has a robust suite of services to equip podcasters and help podcasters create better content than ever before. Visit ProPodcastSolutions.com today and find out how you can get your first episode produced for free. That's ProPodcastSolutions.com.